blinded by the light.
All right, welcome to the BB Dub Show, the best damn jockstrap nerd chat podcast on the internet. To my right, we have the champion dog paddler of Salina, Kansas, Chris Berrigan.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. To my left, we have Nathan Hot Dog Eating Champion Hopeful Joel Jansen.
Now I feel like people are going to think my name's Nathan the way you started that. It's not. It's Joel. Hi.
I like how you clean that up with hopeful.
I know. I did once eat 12 hot dogs in 3 minutes. And holy, I have friends that saw it.
There we go.
It was like for a 4-H hot dog eating contest.
Champion hopeful right here.
And I nailed it. I don't think it was 12. It might have been 8. I don't know. It was either 3 minutes and it was a lot of
hot dogs. Needless to say, you're a champion in my book. I'm Justin. We're going to go ahead and get started with some UFC talk today.
No, thank God. No, this was a good weekend. This was fun.
This was an awesome
UFC
card.
209. Let's get ready to rumble.
That's boxing, my friend.
Yeah, that's boxing.
It's time.
They should bring it over to the UFC.
No, it's like exclusive to boxing. He goes, it's time.
Oh, that guy.
God, that's not very fun to listen to, though.
Well, I mean, it doesn't
compared
sound
to what Joel just did and what you just did.
Because I'm not the charismatic genius that is Joel.
Yes, yes, I am.
And
look
I'm
what
not.
You've done to Joel just now. Now he's gonna have that smug look on his face the rest of the show.
I like how smug looks also look like you smell shit in the air, just like.
It's UFC 209. It was definitely the night of the underdog. We had tons of huge underdogs. I'm talking like 800 or plus 800 underdogs coming back and pulling out wins. It was pretty amazing.
Pulling out.
Winning.
I'm ignoring that as a whole.
You didn't. Your pause did not ignore it. Go.
God, that had to really just fuck up Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how many people really voted for him. I mean, or not voted, but bet on him.
Didn't Wonderboy end up being the
Wonderboy the was the favorite, but it was basically
had to be
like
a slim margin, right?
I want to say that Tyron was a minus 105 or a plus 110 underdog, so it didn't really pay out a whole lot. The first crazy fight of the night was Yuri Alcantara. Sorry if you're watching this. I know you're not, but sorry for that butchering of the name.
But he might be.
Yuri Alcantara.
He fought Cool Hand Luke Sanders. And, I mean, we rewatched this fight just a couple of minutes ago. Great nickname.
Well, after watching that fight, too, he got some fucking cool hands on him. He was beating the shit out of
him. Dude, he was beating the shit out of Yuri the entire time.
He
fucked up in round one. He was pummeling his face in, and then he's like, I'm just going to go ahead and try to sneak this knee into his face. And the ref was like, no, Yuri, you go ahead and recover from your ass beating you just took. You got 5 minutes. Do whatever you want with it.
With that knee, though, now the only thing is, because I know you just kind of learned about that rule, and I've known about it before just from listening to Rogan's podcast and him talking about fighting. And I've learned the rules a little bit from that, and then from you, too. So how do you tell whether that's illegal or not from the fighter standpoint? Because he can't really see what that guy's, where his knees and his hands are. I mean, he's worried about pummeling.
He just
this
has
guy.
To be aware.
You have to be aware. It's part of being a good fighter.
You just have to assume that his knee's down based off like his level.
I mean,
of
where he had him down there for a while.
Yeah, you have to be totally aware of everything you're doing. Just like if you're going to like kind of like keep your opponent at bay, you don't want to be putting your fingers out like that. You got to have your hand out like that.
So in situations like that, you've probably fought enough fights and sparring and that you just assume the guy's down, right?
Yeah, you have to feel the situation. I mean, when you're fighting, like your body's fully engaged on the other person, so you can feel what's going on. And he landed that knee. It was clearly illegal, and Yuri was able to get his marbles back. And to be totally honest, if that wouldn't have happened, I think the fight was just literally seconds away from being called.
Well, I did literally just ask too, like how long is it before they just call a fight when someone's just getting pummeled like that?
It has to be until when the fighter that's getting beat is no longer intelligently defending himself. So things that are intelligently defending yourself, head movement and trying to block the punches with your hand.
So if you keep your arm up?
Yeah, keeping your arm up, moving it to where the punches are coming from, okay. Keeping your head moving. You know,
it
as
was
much
funny
as possible.
Watching it because it looked like he just kind of, like, because he'd been pummeling him for so long, it kind of looked like he just got impatient. And that's why he threw that knee mm-hmm. in there. Like, he's like, just get knocked out already. And the guy wouldn't stop fighting back. And then he threw a knee out of frustration and it totally fucked him in the long run.
I mean, Yuri was able to get it, you know, there was like 45 seconds after that. So he sat down for about 3.5 minutes, was able to recover, come back, you know, and just kind of dance around for 45 seconds.
To
then
last
he came back.
The remainder of the round.
Yeah, just last the remainder of the round. Then come round two. Same thing starts to happen where Cool Hand Luke starts putting the fists to his face.
He mounts him again and just keeps
pounding his head. But Yuri goes ahead and throws in some of that Brazilian jiu-jitsu and starts rolling around. Goes, grabs a leg. The leg comes out. Doesn't get it that first time. Second time, he just does a total flip while Luke is just pummeling his face. Flips on him. Grabs that leg, gets on top of the leg, just starts squeezing it, pushing right on that kneecap and twisting. It's just a matter of seconds where Luke didn't even look like he was in pain. But
no, he just gave
up. Like, he's like, I know this is going to end badly. Tap, tap.
Oh, yeah. He definitely threw in the towel.
Felt that if I try and hold on, there's nothing I can do. And if
there's
I try
a lot
and
of
hold on,
will
I'm just going to get something that's going to hurt a lot.
A lot of people will attack you for, tapping fucking pussy. No, that's playing smart. That's knowing that if I let this go any further, it could cause some serious damage.
Potentially your career and how bad
those
kind of
holds can just like fuck up knee. Over a long career, I mean, those things just wear down.
According to all the judges' cards that came out after that fight, was already down 8-10 on the scorecard. So round one, he got beat so bad that he got 8 points. And Luke Sanders, not Gaston from Beauty and the Beast next week. Luke Sanders had 10 points for the round. So, I mean,
he basically didn't have much of a choice. He's either tap this guy out.
He either had to win the last two rounds, and that would make it, that would have made it a draw. Or he would have had to knock him out or submit him, which he did. And that was awesome to see. The next fight after that was one of...
Is this a big old gash over
the
eye guy?
This is gash over the eye, Darren Elkins.
Boy.
Fighter out of Team Alpha Male over in Sacramento, California. One of Uriah Faber's guys.
This was probably my favorite fight I've watched in the short time that I've slowly been getting into UFC with you. Mm-hmm. I think this is my favorite fight I've ever watched.
It's a beautiful fight. Like, it was crazy.
I mean, because you watched it too, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched the recap on that one because I missed that. But I watched how it ended.
It was similar to the first one in getting his ass kicked, but it was
so much. Close to it that in round one he also lost 8-10.
And I was gonna say too, I mean, it was similar. The only really the big difference was it went for 2 3/4 rounds of getting his ass kicked. Like it was never he was slowly coming
he was
back,
never on top. He
never made moves, never looked like he was gonna ever take the fight over.
But that third round he just decided to put on the hurt. He got Mursad Bektik. He got his back against the cage and he just started pummeling him. And just gave it his all. Like, this guy, like, I don't even know if Darren Elkins knew what he was doing. I think it was pure animal instinct what he was going off of,
just
and it worked for him.
Adrenaline was the only thing that was running that guy
at that
point.
Just keep punching and hope something lands.
And he knocked him out so hard, the guy fell over.
Crumbled.
And his head was, like, between his knees, like, backwards. Like, it looked extremely painful. And it was such an awesome win to witness. And not only that... But the guy was a -800 dog.
So you bet.
-800?
He was a -800 dog.
So you bet 20 you bet bucks, you win how much? Let's do 10. Easy math.
$10, 80.
80, okay, yeah. So that's what, okay.
So you put $100 on him, you're making $800.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
It's crazy money.
Imagine if you would have done a parlay with Yuri and him. Whew. I don't know what the payout on that would have been, but it would have been pretty good.
Probably would have been pretty significant, yeah. That was a fun fight, though. I've never seen a fight that looked like this. I thought they were going to call that fight like 3 separate times when that guy was getting his ass beat. But you said, like how you said earlier, he kept kind of blocking and kept, what'd you call him? Smart head movements or something like that?
Intelligently defending himself.
Yeah, so it's, I guess if you keep doing that, you're, no matter how bloody and beat up. I mean, it looked like he probably lost a pint of blood.
Oh, he lost so much blood. Like it was the fourth fight of the night as a whole, and almost all the blood came from him. Like, all the blood that was on the canvas was his. And it was really cool to be able to witness that. That gash on his face was at least half an inch deep.
Yeah. And 2 inches long. I saw an inch and a half width.
Yeah.
And it was so
gnarly.
Well, and then his face after the first round, his face looked destroyed.
Oh yeah.
It was fat on one side, looked like it was sunken on the other side. His eye was all huge and it was closed up.
And that moment after he wins, when he just lets out that blood curling yell, and you just see nothing but pure animal instinct.
Yeah, that's probably about as primitive as you could have possibly looked as a human being after that win. The way he yelled, it just looked like the animal inside of him came out.
Yeah, it was
because awesome. That's what fueled him. That wasn't him.
I feel like that's the same yell you throw out after you smash someone's head with a warhammer out on the battlefield.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's what Shogooki does. And
his like
For Honor.
Face was like half of it was like open, half of it was like swollen shut. So it was like, like, it was awesome. It was so cool to witness.
Yeah, I've never seen anything where somebody's getting beat that bad for that long. What was left in the fight? I mean, he lost the fight.
I want to say there's 2 minutes. There's less than 2 minutes left in the fight.
That's ridiculous. Then they come back and win that.
It's
mind-blowing.
Yeah. The other guy just needs to control his gas tank a little bit better.
He definitely ran out of gas. He had not much
left
in the tank.
It is funny how fast people can just expend themselves.
Oh, yeah. Especially like going for like the takedowns and things like that. That's going to be the things that really go through your gas tank when you're trying to get somebody down and somebody has a really good takedown defense. Good luck. Like, you're going to expel a lot of energy just to get them down to the ground. And then what are you going to do?
It's crazy because I feel like endurance training is such a huge part of what they do. But, and it doesn't seem, when you're just watching it from the outside, it doesn't seem like much is going on. But
yeah.
With all the grappling and everything, it's honestly just, they run out of gas so hard, so quickly, and especially the burst fighters. I've noticed, like, the guys that just kind of buy their time and then come at you hard for a little bit, and it just
expend a bunch of energy at once, and then spurs. Yeah,
it's crazy how much they actually let out in just such a small amount of time, and you don't see it until later in the fight when they're just out of gas.
Well, you see he had him in the, what was it, a guillotine? And he didn't even have enough energy to choke him out.
Yeah, because he got him good. Like
he got it in there. He was deep in there, and then he just lost it.
No, was it? I want to say he had his arm. I don't think it was a guillotine.
I don't know. Maybe because remember he had him.
I would have to go back and watch it again.
He got right under his chin, but just couldn't squeeze
hard enough.
Yeah, that's
true. He just couldn't squeeze hard enough. He just was so
Which was
tired.
A combo of running out of energy and also
getting
having
your ass beat.
And then, and a lack of blood.
Yeah.
I mean, how much blood had he lost at that point?
Definitely lost a lot of blood. A lot of blood, a lot of juice at that point.
Probably had blood in the back ready for him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The next two, I just want to kind of touch on them. We got Alistair Overeem pulling a win over Mark Hunt, who's an awesome knockout artist. Mark Hunt is nobody to mess with. I mean, he looks like a big fat guy in the ring, but that guy knows how to put a hurt on somebody with just one touch. And Alistair Overeem even got hurt during the fight, was able to come back, kneed him in the face, got the W. And the cool thing about that win to me is that he was in the hospital for the 24 hours leading up to that fight with food poisoning, shitting his brains out and throwing up. And he was able to hold his shit together literally to come back and win it.
Opposite of what you do after making weight.
Exactly.
Usually you're just putting on the weight, but he was just shitting it right out.
He was easily making weight, even though it's heavyweight. So, I mean, all you have to do is be under 265. Mark Hunt, yeah.
He kind of looks like, what's his face, from Street Fighter. He's got a very similar build. E Honda. He could be the E Honda of the UFC. That's what he should have done. And he would have won.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He's built very similar. But instead, he fought like an idiot.
I didn't fight like an
no,
idiot.
No, he was throwing
he took
some
a knee to a head to the head.
No, I'm just kidding. He was throwing some haymakers, though. Like, if he would have connected on any of those, like,
he would have killed him.
He's
the king of the walk away knockout. Like, he'll land one of those punches and then walk away from you.
Oh yeah, you guys were yelling at the beginning of the fight. Just get one of those walk away knockouts. Get one of those walkaways.
That's why he's one of my favorites.
Is it like a punch and drop a mic and walk away kind of
thing?
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of the mic drop.
Just one of those just gets him right on the chin. that man's not going to have a chin.
His whole bottom jaw just
gonna.
I just want to see that one time. Just land a punch so hard, so vicious that the whole jaw dislocates.
I've never seen it with a punch, but I've seen it with a kick. I've seen it with a kick before. Yeah, it's nasty looking.
It's gross.
Yeah, you get super nasty looking. Power and leverage on those kicks.
Yeah, you get those leverage, especially those kickboxers with the super long legs. Ooh, they'll knock your face off.
I feel like
off,
a haymaker
literally.
Coming down on the jaw at the right
so
angle.
So continuing with Street Fighter, screw with long legs like a Dalshim.
God, he had the super long Gumby legs.
And arms.
Yeah.
He has some Gumby legs.
Gumby legs.
I was always that asshole just because I pissed people off because they could stretch out and punch him.
Just keep doing it. His little swinging kicks underneath.
It's the same reason I was in Eboshi in the For Honor beta.
He could have kicked way more ass if he also learned some jiu-jitsu. Imagine the guy with the long arms. I don't know his name. I haven't played that game since I was like 10.
Dalshim.
Yeah, Dalshim. There you go. He just said it.
It's also not very fair that he could just do jiu-jitsu from long distance. Just
throw his arms out, grab you with the legs, wrap you up. Just kind of like Mr. Fantastic's his legs around you in a knot.
Exactly.
It's the Indian Fantastic.
The fight after that, we had Rashad Evans fighting Brett Favre, and that was an embarrassing show.
That
for
was
Rashad
another
Evans.
Of my more favorite fights because I expected the man that looked like Brett. He had a wrap on his knee that looked like a Copperfit thing.
And the thing about it, he had it super taped up. I guess he was like really hurt before the fight, but he was like, as long as the doctors clear me, I'm gonna fight. And he did it. He did the damn thing, and he won.
How
like,
old is that guy?
You know what? You guys talk amongst yourselves, and I'll
Brett
find
Favre?
That out.
Very.
He looked like I thought it was. Brett
I literally, Favre I literally don't even have the guy's actual name on here because he looked like Brett Favre.
Even physically, his body almost kind of looked similar to a late 30s old white man with gray hair.
He did. He looked horrible. But then
Brett
we were
Favre's
watching those interviews afterwards. Brett we're Favre's like, how did he get younger?
Yeah, he's some. Yeah, it was weird. During the actual fight, he'd aged to about 43, and then after the post fight interviews, he was 35.
Was he shooting Levi jeans commercials in between rounds?
And Copperfits. He's 39 years old, so he's an old guy. He's up there, but so is Rashad. Rashad Evans himself.
About the same age, or just as a hand.
37.
Yeah, so about the same age.
So he's 2 years younger, looked at least 15 years younger, and for some reason couldn't get this guy's number because Kelly just was able to outweather him. And I think it's just to a point where Rashad Evans is an old guy, and I think you gotta give him the right fights that are going to be entertaining, or you got to just move along.
The right fights being entertaining. I think this was an entertaining fight. That was a good one to watch. It was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed watching it. I think part of it was just because I was impressed that the guy that
he looked like he was 55.
You can keep making the Joker over and over and over again, but how else do you describe him? He looked like Brett Favre. He had a copper fit thing on his knee. But it was just impressive that the way that guy
sold
came out.
Sold exclusively at Walmart.
No, you can find that Big Five around here.
I've seen him at Dick's before.
You're Dick's. Let's go.
And the one that everyone is talking about.
Woodley versus Wonderboy.
Now
I couldn't take him seriously when they kept calling him Wonderboy over and over again.
My favorite part is that he walks out to Tenacious D's Wonderboy.
That was
high
nice.
Above the mucky muck, full of clouds. I don't think that's what it is, but it's something like that.
He's the reason why right. Jack Black becomes irrelevant.
Honestly, just going into it, not knowing anything about the two guys, it was. Wonderboy was very impressive because he just didn't look like he's stacked up physically, like the way he looks. But
Tyron's a freak at that weight class.
He's a lot tougher and a lot stronger than he looks.
Well, didn't you say in outside of making weight, he probably walks around at 190 or something, 200? Like you said, he's a pretty heavy guy.
Tyron probably walks around at 200 pounds, I would say.
Which
is crazy.
He looks all of it. He looks like an NFL running back.
Yeah, let's say, because he's as tall as me.
Yeah.
It was kind of, watching the actual match, like the first round especially, was super boring to me because all they were doing was just testing each other out and it was
way too much respect for each other in my eyes.
But it was, honestly, listening to the recap afterwards as well, and I totally get what they were saying, but they were saying with like with it being as close as it was, would there be a third one maybe? And they're like, well, you know, some fighters, even though they're both great fighters, some matchups are just boring. And it's the way it's the fighting styles against one another for some reason just doesn't work to be a very entertaining fight.
Wasn't the first fight not that boring though?
It definitely wasn't that boring, but it wasn't fantastic. It was,
I mean,
it was definitely worlds better than this one was.
Yeah.
Outside of like just a couple of exciting moments, it was mainly just Woodley walking around in circles while Wonder Boy kept him
against the fence. Yeah. And that's bringing us back to what we think about the fight. Me and Chris watched at the same spot and saw two totally different fights.
Yeah, he was watching a stupid one that didn't make
like
sense.
Chris was yelling. He was like, "Oh, he definitely won at least four rounds." I was like, "You're crazy."
Okay, well, this is before I understood what I was actually saying.
I think
you still owe me $10.
I really think that outside of the last 30 seconds of the fight, that it could have been another draw, though.
Yeah, I really agree with that.
It was that close to being a draw, and then he just landed a flurry.
The thing about
and it was just like he needed that, or he was not. I didn't think he was going to win it.
I don't think that he deserved it. I don't think that either one of them deserved it. I think it should have been another draw. I think that if you were going to crown a winner of it, I think that you go with Thompson. But that's. I mean that could be thrown up in the air, but I think that giving it to Woodley when he clearly didn't win it was a really weird thing to do. But when you do something like that, you get the eyes off of a bad fight and you put it on bad judging. I mean, I took the time yesterday and I wrote down how many people in the UFC / MMA world think that it was just a ridiculous call. You got people like Joe Rogan, Dominic Cruz, Boss Rutten, Felice Herrig, Robin Black, Elias Trudeau. I mean, all these people are very prominent.
They think the final judgment was a ridiculous call?
Yeah.
Do they think it should have been a draw again?
They said it at the very least a draw, if not Wonder Boy winner.
I thought it was going to be called a draw if it wasn't for that last 30 seconds. I really did. It just, nothing big really happened in the entire time. It was just, the only time Woodley would even come at him was just, every 3.5 minutes, he would go out. He would jump forward with a flurry, and then he would be back against the fence again.
Yeah,
and it was just really annoying.
The thing that makes it so that it couldn't be weighed just the way that you're thinking it, that last 30 seconds should give it to him, is that with MMA, it's a 10-point must win system.
I'm not saying it should give it to him. I'm saying it did give it to him.
I feel
like it was a cop out for the judges. They were going to probably have to call it a draw again, and then like, oh wait, something good happened.
Well, even looking at the judges' cards, the judges' cards don't really agree with that, because
one of them was a draw. Right?
One of them was a draw. The only one that was a draw was the one that gave Woodley a 10-8 round for that last round, because the other judges gave Woodley round two. For some reason, because I have no idea why. Like, he didn't do anything in round two.
That wasn't... The three was when he had him on the ground, right?
Exactly.
For, like, 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. And they gave him two, but not three. Now, the thing about... Think about the UFC scoring system. It's 10-point must-win scoring system. So you're looking at winner getting 10, loser getting 9. Now, a 10-8 round is when you get close to a defeat. And then they're like, well... If the fight would have gone any longer, it would have led to a finish. So that's why I think you could give Tyron that last round as a 10-8 round. But,
I mean, Wonderboy got up at the end of it. It never got close to a knockout in my eyes.
It was pretty.
I think it was getting close if he didn't get out.
Big John is really good at his job, and John was closing in on it. But I'm saying the only way that you could make it a draw is if you give him a 10-8 round on that, because Woodley had his back against the fence all of one, all of two, and all of four.
So, you know, with me, the only issue I had with what you saw in the fight, and I still have a lot to learn with this and understanding how, you know, what's a critical strike and takedowns and things like the way that things are scored. I still have a ways to learn with that.
But yeah,
you know, and I'm getting there, and that'll come with time. And, watching more and more fights, but the comment you made of Woodley wasn't doing anything to prove he was the champ, he doesn't have to prove anything. he doesn't have to prove that he's the champ. When you were like, well, he should be going out there trying to win it, somebody needs to try to take it from him. And that was up to Wonderboy to do that. And that's, to me, that's, you shouldn't knock Woodley because he wasn't trying to win the fight. He just has to not lose it. Wonderboy's the one that needs to try to win it. He's the one needed to go on the offensive and actually take that fight. Because he's the one, if he wants to be champion, he's to take it from Woodley. Woodley just has to defend it.
Yeah, but God, that was so...
It was boring.
I get that.
You can say it was boring and it wasn't entertaining, but...
It just reminded me of, like, when I watched...
football is what that was.
It was SEC football, but it was also just like watching Pacquiao Mayweather, like, years ago. It's just... You just realize, like, Mayweather isn't really as so much a fighter as he is a Dodger, and it was just
playing points.
That's the thing. It's not the kind of fight you want. I mean, it's not really even that much of a fight. It's one guy just trying to not get hit for as long as he can, and then poke him where he can, and it's just it lasted so long. But that was kind of what it was. That, like, with Woodley, he was back against the fence. They were just testing each other, and then you'd try and hit it. You'd hit him at the chest a couple times, then he would land a flurry. And then it would get back, but he never opened himself. He never put himself at risk in any way because he knew that he might get knocked out if he did.
That's exactly like my point. It's like, you don't have to. You're the champion.
But he does because this isn't something where you can rest on your laurels.
Didn't he also like recently say that he's the best welterweight of all time or something?
Yeah,
like
you know
that?
Who was laughing about that? George St. Pierre. Because he watched that fight on Saturday night and he goes, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and kick Michael Bisping's ass next month, or I don't know when that is. I think it's actually July.
But do you think Woodley would change his fighting style when he fought somebody like St. Pierre?
Yeah, but St. Pierre, it doesn't matter what you do. He's going to beat you. I mean, the only person who ever beat him was Matt Serra, and as much as I love Matt Serra as a guy.
Brother of Michael Serra?
No relation whatsoever. Not nearly as awkward either.
That'd be hilarious if Michael Serra had a complete brother that was opposites. Complete opposite MMA badass.
No, I mean, like I said, I love Matt Serra, but he got lucky against GSP. All I'm saying is Tyron Woodley, he put out some bad stuff. Like, people were watching that fight and were like, man, I don't like his chances against anybody in the top
five. A lot
of
the announcers, too, were like, man, if you're going to come out and say you're the best of all time, you can't be playing this guy to a draw the first time around and then barely
being... Damn near a draw again.
Yeah, damn near a draw again. It's like, the best ever probably would not do that. You'd probably knock him out.
Well, Mayweather made a career of doing that, saying he's the best ever and really never did anything to win it.
He did plenty of knockouts when he was younger. He just hasn't done any in the last...
Plenty of knockouts? I wouldn't say plenty. I don't think he actually has that many knockouts in his career.
I mean, well, out of 40... is he 49 or 50? He's at 50, right? With that...
49 or no, I think. I thought the... If the McGregor one ever...
Oh, yeah, the McGregor one is going to be...
That would make him 50-0 if he won.
Moral of the story, GSP's going to come and have two belts simultaneously, much like McGregor, only he's not going to leave after winning them both. Boom.
Mike, not dropped because they are stationary.
These are way too expensive to drop. I'm not going to do that. Sorry.
Yeah, don't do that.
just pretend.
All right. Well, good talk. Yeah. Speaking of aggressive violence,
let's talk about aggressive violence. Oh, it's my favorite.
Is there non-aggressive violence? Or is that...
It's an oxymoron.
Yeah, was it an oxymoron? Well, yeah, whatever. Speaking of aggression and violence... loud aggression and violence
You start listening to this right now, turn this off because we're gonna spoil the shit out of Wolf.
Wait
Logan. But it did.
You should
guys see what I just did there. I controlled time. You guys have no idea what just happened. Magic. All of that happened.
I'm still frozen.
Did he just Doctor Strange?
So let's see, Logan. Anyway, my note here is Logan was the tits.
There were tits.
There were two boobies. You are correct.
Well, boobies. One booby. It was a half of each boob, which makes really one boob.
I mean, but you saw both nipples.
Yeah. Was it a bachelorette party? It was confusing me because she was already in a wedding dress.
I think. I don't know. I don't know what it was.
Was it she on the way to... It was a Vegas wedding or something. So, could have been. Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to spoil Logan really hard and talk about everything we liked about it, didn't like about it. So if you don't want to hear any of that, then go away and bye-bye. We will miss you, and we'll see you after you watch it, and then come back and watch us. But anyway, Logan was the tits.
Isn't it cool that I was able to use this same little sticker that we got right here? I saved it. I'm using it right now. We used it the other day.
What sticker?
You can't see it right now, but you can see it in the video.
He's talking about the graphic he put up.
Oh, yeah.
Look at it. It's kind of cool. It's right there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hey, we know you. We know you. Hey, how you been?
I wish you were good enough at editing to make it like bark a little bit.
I wish I was good enough to do that too.
Let's roll over and just start kicking its legs.
So
I'm gonna like do a half-assed job and it's gonna look fucking
first
horrible.
A little financial news that I found interesting today. Logan, it was now the fifth highest opening for an R-rated film of all time, and that's $85 million.
Golf clap it,
which is pretty good. We all know the number one film of all time, which is for
Pool of Dead.
Yeah, Deadpool opened at $134 million, which was crazy, and no one expected it except for all the people who wanted it for a decade. But
ever since the first Wolverine movie totally ruined it, they're like, "Do it right, do it right."
That was just awful.
But no, it's a very great opening. It's already at $237 million worldwide, which I mean, the original X-Men only made $296 million in its entire run in theaters, so it's gonna surpass that.
Well, you can't really compare it to today. That. I mean, that was the first real comic book movie. I mean, aside from Blade and stuff, that was what launched the current state of comic book movies. I mean, it was going up.
No, I'm just saying, but like even the movies that came after it are like topping out near $400 million.
Oh, really?
And I think that let's see, I have the list here.
This will definitely close over half a million.
X2 topped out at $407 million. Last Stand $373 million. X Men Origins Wolverine $373 million. $353 million for First Class. $414 million.
Wow, even First Class didn't do that.
$414 million for the Wolverine. Days of Future Past made $747 million.
Which Deadpool made 800, didn't it?
783.
Oh, okay. So is that
Yeah, that's actually the highest grossing film of all time.
Wow.
Is Deadpool.
I think Logan might give it a run for its money, man. I mean they're totally separate films, but
it's a 237 already. I think it'll get up there towards like the top.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll surpass Deadpool.
Yeah, that's a little bit ambitious. I say it cracks 550.
I'm going to go with six.
Anyway, financials aside.
Anyway, so I loved it.
You said we were going to let people know what we liked and disliked?
Yes.
There is no dislikes. I can't think of
any dislikes.
I tried to dissect it the other day.
I actually wrote that, any dislikes. I'm like, was there anything you didn't
I tried
like
to dissect it?
It
the other day when we were right after the UFC fight and talk about it, and I can't think of one thing I didn't like.
Favorite characters...
Favorite character. I really did like 23, aka Laura, or vice versa.
X-23.
You know what I mean.
X-23.
She was, like I said, silently my favorite, I think my favorite character in it. I think the only reason why I wouldn't pick Logan is I've had Logan for over a decade now.
Oh, but this was by far his best
best work for sure. And probably the most true to his actual character with... Us finally getting the R rating that now we see Wolverine probably should have had for the last decade.
Yeah.
Because it's you can't really appreciate Wolverine and his violence and the way he handles himself with a PG-13 rating.
It's so true.
And honestly, just watching this movie, it was very obvious but that they were trying to do something very different. Even though they hint at it being a part of the X-Men universe, they didn't have any callbacks to certain mutants. They didn't have any like cameos. They just had... It was about the characters in this movie. And at its heart, it was really a film about family. And it was about like the father-son dynamic between Logan and Charles. Xavier. And how that passes down to the father-daughter dynamic between X-23 and Logan, and it was really great and really heartfelt. And I mean, my favorite character in the whole movie was Charles Xavier, just because I've never seen him done like that, and it's a great...
He really did take on a fatherly role.
He's always that fatherly role, really,
but it was different this time around.
It was more tragic this time around because... He was still that wise old man at his heart, but it was very obvious he was going through like a degenerative brain disease. And it's like, what happens when the most powerful mind in the world starts to break down like that, and like when they were, I mean, they hinted at it, but I think what really happened to the X-Men and why they were all gone was I don't know if you guys
accidentally killed him.
Yeah, when he was, they said something about it when they were the in that casino in Oklahoma. The
Westchester incident.
Yeah, where like 600 people were hurt and like 7 or 8 people died. And I think, and I actually read an interview where they were writing a, they wrote a scene where it was going to be like a flashback, but then they decided not to do it because it's what they really wanted this movie to be about the characters in that time and in that moment. But they did hint at that, and it's because it's kind of loosely based on the old man Logan storyline from the comics. But in that storyline,
I'm buying that.
Yeah,
pretty soon here.
Yeah, and I need to read it too. But from what I've heard about that storyline, Logan kills everybody, and he's tricked into killing everybody. But this,
and they use
this time
Taliban around, to hunt them all down.
Yeah, and this time around, the way they did it was it sounded like it was basically whenever his mind started to break down, Charles Xavier's mind started to break down, that they.
He had one of those episodes.
And somehow ended up killing most of them. And I'm guessing Wolverine didn't die because he's Wolverine.
Well, I mean, he's able to move when everybody else is just stuck.
Well, yeah, but that's, I think this has to do with this healing factor and how it's just like the same reason at the end of X3, X-Men United, he was the one that had to go kill Jean Grey because.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he remembered the incident because it was a huge episode that, like, a giant seizure for him.
And well, because when he woke up in his sleep, too, he really started feeling bad and he started tearing up.
He finally remembered
what had happened because he finally thought that was the best night of his life when they sat at those people's house.
God, that was so sad. God,
that's also why I love Charles Xavier because that, I mean. Patrick Stewart made me tear up at least once in that movie because I was just
in that scene where he woke up and he's Wolverine came and he's like, just let her sleep a little longer, and when he was like, I don't deserve a night like tonight, yeah, that broke my heart,
dude. When and if any of you have ever had a family member or close to anybody who's gone through something where they had to have that kind of. You just see someone getting old and sort of losing who they were because they're going through something like he was. It's heartbreaking, and it was really tugged at a lot of heartstrings in the audience, for sure. And that's why
you could almost say that Charles would be that person for a lot of us. I mean, we, for over a decade, have watched him.
17 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
17 years.
I mean, we've watched that character and grew up with him, and he's, I mean, he's clearly not like you were kind of pointing out his family, but... I mean, if you've watched every single one of these,
he's our Charles Xavier.
Yeah, he's but the Charles Xavier we've known, just like it's the only Logan we've known.
Yeah, to your guys' point too, he always plays the wise guide or the guide to all the other X-Men. He's that smart father figure, teacher behind everything they do,
who has always had the answer.
To see his mind in shambles, it's just. It's crazy, and it was. I thought it was just such a great choice. That's why he was my favorite character in the whole movie because I think I never got more emotionally invested than when he was going through what he was going through and seeing the way Logan, the way it broke his heart to have to see a man that he once just like looked up to so much just be a shamble of what he used to be.
Yeah, essentially,
just a shell of a man. I mean, what he
made
was.
Him his who he is.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my favorite character, and you like. X-23.
Like 23, I think part of it was I liked her character, and I also just really liked the actress, that girl. She did a fantastic job.
First movie too.
She did a fantastic job of being X-23 with almost no lines for the first hour and hour and 10 minutes of the movie.
Logan even made a joke. I was like, "Holy shit, you can talk!"
And she started blabbering in Spanish. Yeah,
she could get some nods for supporting actress, I think, with that performance, especially as her first one ever, like just coming out of nowhere.
No, she's definitely going to get some breakout actress awards.
She'll
for
get
sure.
breakout from other shows, but I'm thinking like some actual like real nods, I mean, like Golden Globes.
It's all a matter of the when it comes to that. It's all about the politics and
for sure
how well James Mangold is liked along the Academy.
Our first
like
episode,
that.
I said though that I think from what I saw from Logan that they might. Win some or at least get some nods for some Oscars. Yeah. I think he really could.
I just hope that it's not too early because I mean, movies that come out earlier
get forgotten.
They get forgotten.
That's true. That's very true.
Because Oscar season hits around October and then it goes from October to December. But this is the best comic book movie I have ever seen. I mean, that's well, just
if
me.
You exclude Deadpool, just because it was probably done the most perfect to the story, yeah, but and that to kind the character, of... but no, I'm just saying, like, the best comic book, I don't know if you can necessarily, I'd say it's equally no, as it, good as Deadpool. When
but
it,
that's
well, I can't say the best. I'm gonna say it's my favorite comic book.
You remember we had this discussion where we were talking about how comic book movie is not a category anymore. It's not comic book movie. It just because it came from a comic book, this was a drama. It was a drama with a lot of action, and Deadpool was a comedy with a lot of action. But I just don't like it when
that's thrown in the same category as musical.
Yes.
Let's not forget.
I mean, there was a lot of dancing in the form of, you know, cutting people's heads off, but and skewering them and shooting them in the head. But
and salt and pepper.
Oh, before we go too into this tangent,
it made me want to shoot.
Let's let Justin tell us who his character is, and then we'll continue.
Oh yeah.
My character. I mean, I'm gonna be the basic douche of the crew here. I'm gonna say Logan.
There's no
I mean, just
no.
the.
I don't think there's a wrong answer.
Wolverine was amazing.
I mean, the pain that you see in that first Hugh scene Jackie. after he fucks up those guys trying to steal his wheels, where he's in that beat up bathroom and he takes his shirt off. You just see his back is fucked up. You just see
the scarring you've never seen before.
The fact, like when he shoots out his claws and just one of them doesn't want to quite come out, so he has to pull it.
Oh, that was great.
He starts pulling it. You just see that pain in his face, and you see the blood come out of his hands.
Yeah,
it's just such a great movie, and just the fact.
I mean, the pain in his face that you've never really ever seen for more than a second. That it was like that hurt and that hurt for a while. Like more than you know, like oh, done healed. Yeah,
it's just he was fantastic, and to touch on what you were talking about when X-24 stabs Xavier in the chest, and Logan finds him, and when he's saying it wasn't me, that's the part that got me, like where I was literally almost crying in the theater. Just because he loves Xavier so much, he does not, even though he knows he's on the way out, he doesn't want his last thoughts to be, I that finally Logan. Pushed you over the edge. I finally was too much for you to handle. Like, I even pushed you, the person that probably loved me more than anybody, to kill me. Yeah. And he just was saying, it wasn't me. Oh, man. It was such a good
portrayal. Which happened directly after Xavier had just realized what he'd done.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean... For me, the reason I really think it will get some at least consideration for Oscars is just because as cool of a movie as it was overall and as good of an action movie as it was, those were the moments that made it so great. The moments with them just as characters and their relationships between one another and like how
emotional the movie was.
I mean, by the end Logan was just like finally accepting that this little girl was, even though it was his stolen genetic material that it's allowed her.
His daughter, yeah.
So, it's, I mean, it's just like the comics. She's a clone, but she just came out as a female. So, but that's what that's what your daughter would be. That's what anything is just a genetic clone and replica of what you, from your material. And so when he actually accepts it emotionally, that's his daughter. That was great too. But yeah, so that was mine.
It was interesting to see Wolverine after Xavier died too, just really just become like completely broken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like, you've never seen him look so vulnerable before until then. He's always had his moments with, especially with Jean Grey and the way he feels for her. But watching Xavier die or like watching his finally realize he's gone, he's dead. Like he broke. And then when he buries him, when he's sitting there and he's telling whatever he's saying about sitting outside of the water and, you know, it's...
He was trying to get some nice words out.
And couldn't. He's a broken man.
Yeah, and then she comes up and grabs his hand. It's just like, oh, come on. With the heartstrings.
Yeah, he was just...
Two bloody little hands. That was also really cool, too. It was a cool scene at the same time.
Like, when you see... Like, when they're in the car and you see the blood on her hands from where her claws come
outside
out.
Outside of the emotional stuff, too... When she was just full on rage moding people,
God,
she was so good. Like the visceral, like animal
just that first
screech,
scene,
just,
like that first scene where she goes inside the compound that they have, and she comes out with the dude's head.
I knew
she had a head in the commercials. Like, that's gonna be a head. I can't show it right now. That's gonna
I actually
be a head,
never
though.
Noticed. I never noticed in the commercial.
And I was waiting for it. I was like, please be it. Walk out with a head. Walk out with a head. And then she does. I was like, yes, I knew it. Yes.
But she was so good in the action, and I mean, Hugh Jackman always is, and it was cool to see Hugh Jackman, like because he was an older, more injured version of himself that was just fighting through the pain. He really actually portrayed that in the scenes where he was in
everything fight, hurt, everything brutal,
like
as fuck.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Daredevil, the way they did the fighting in that.
Yeah,
because
good
they
comparison.
They did it very realistic in Daredevil, because there was like that in the second episode, the hallway scene that was like
that continuous shot.
Yeah. I love the way they did that, because he would just be kicking someone's ass for like a second and knock him out, and then he'd just be like up against the wall, like
just huffing and puffing and out of breath.
Like, just get up again right when someone else is about to attack him. And that's kind of how it was, more realistic version of like how that would go down if you were going to be able to. You'd have to just have small bursts and recover. And that with Logan, that was he did it so well. Yeah.
Jackman did. And just the way that they really took advantage of the R rating was awesome.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, every single time that they had a fight scene, I was like, oh!
And with
you would see the claws go through the head and out the skull, or rip through a body.
Or like
it was
through the back of the head and pops the eye out. Like,
yeah,
it was so crazy.
When he cut that Hicks head off, like that was X-24 that did it to him, but yeah. He cut the Hicks head off with all the claws. You just saw like shards of his fit, because he was using both claws, so like six knives going through his head. It just split in like several pieces. I was like, oh God, that's amazing.
Did you guys not? This is the way I felt like the movie kind of almost portrayed throughout, is it was super gritty, which I really loved. It almost had oddly a westerny kind of a tone. Like how when you watch like a good old, like a, just a good old like Clint Eastwood Western.
That's how they made it.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the tone they went with.
The films that inspired James Mangold for writing and making this movie were Shane, which they even show in the movie. It's an old Western. Him,
which
Laura,
did you know that's what Laura was quoting at the end?
Yeah,
and that
then,
movie.
Unforgiven was the other one, which is a classic. And if you guys haven't seen that, don't do that. That's really loud. If you haven't seen that one, that's one of Clint Eastwood's westerns with Morgan Freeman. Oh man, that is such a good movie. I have it if you need.
Well,
it.
Well, then that makes me feel better. That's how I felt, because it seemed very Clint Eastwood-y, like the whole time, very dirty, gritty.
Yeah, I heard of a lot of comparisons to Hugh Jackman's performance to a very Clint Eastwood-esque when he was just being his dirty, gruff self.
Which was awesome. I loved
classic
it.
Movies. And I mean, I don't know. I have nothing but good things to say about this movie. I could go on all day.
I mean, it's Rotten Tomatoes still gotten rocking at 93%, so it's
93.
It's
gone down 1 point since.
To go back to some of my favorite like quotes from the movie at the end, when he goes, oh, so that's what that feels like. You don't know what he's talking about. Is he talking about death? Is he talking about loving another person? You know,
I think he was talking
loving
about
a daughter,
family. Because that was the central theme of the entire movie was accepting family, I guess, and the love of your family. And he kind of finally accepted it from her as a daughter at the end. Yeah. That was how I read it. Though. But you could interpret it differently.
They even made a comment in the middle of it, well, Logan did, about not having family anymore because they were all dead. They were all gone.
Yeah.
When Xavier was like, this is your family, he has none. They're all gone.
Yeah, but I think Xavier was trying to get him to accept that you could still have that. It's not too late for you to have that. And at the end, he ended up dying with his daughter and accepting that he did still have family all the way to the end. He lost his last resemblance of his former family when he lost Xavier, but then he accepted her as his daughter, and that was kind of
a cool little symbolic gesture too, where she flipped the cross, turned into an axe, and she walks away.
It really was, because the cross isn't who Logan or
I will
James
say
or
the
Wolverine
one
was.
Yeah,
he was an X-Man. He was. You know, X-Force, he was Logan.
I will say the only knock I had on the movie was I did not want it to end right where it did. It was like, wait, so was Eden real? Was Eden actually a real place? Because it was in the comics, that's which is you. Why they were going there, and then they were
that's for you to
they were to making not a know. Run.
Well, I don't think it was Eden wanted, as much as it was they were granted asylum
once they crossed the Canadian border. They were clear.
Yeah, but I,
which is cool though. That's where they people were go for freedom, Canada. But this must be during the Trump years.
But they, well, I mean,
well, it's solid. At least
this would be right after Trump's administration. So if mutants,
no
were
immigrants
around,
and no mutants,
2029.
But no, that I just kind of wanted. I was hoping that it would end on like a note of all of them walking over a hill and seeing a compound that looks just like the Eden from the comic books, or
maybe they didn't do that because that is exactly what. Maybe people were expecting was this final panning over of a hill, and it's.
I'm just super glad that the production that the
unfinished business
executive stayed out of it, because you know there was one guy who was like, "Let's at the end of the movie, let's just have the rocks move around." No.
I really also I was reading an article today about how Fox. Fox as a studio came out and said that they're basically going to, because with the success of Deadpool and Logan, that they're kind of going to step back and not really put their mitts on like the next X-Men film when it comes out. Good. As much. Like they're regardless of what it's rated or regardless of like how they're just going to let the creative people make it a good movie and not have to like. Dumb it down to make the rating better or to fit in things like you want it
all
to do.
For it.
But that's what's so great about Logan and Deadpool doing great is that people are realizing if you make an awesome movie, no matter what it's rated
it opens the door for content, creativity and kind of freedom to
no matter
do what
the
you want.
Budget, just yeah.
And
just,
we live in the age of creativity. I mean, yeah. we're an example of that. We're three guys who have three common or four common interests, depending on how you want to. Put it, and you know we're making something, we're creating something, and this is the time where if you have something to say and you have something to make, you can make it. And I'm so glad to see studios let that happen, to let creativity.
Well, it just shows
run free
time and time again that when things end up bad for studios, when movies don't come out as good as they wanted them to, it's when there's like a bunch of executives with their fingers on it or that putting their mitts on. Yeah, like BVS and that's what scares
Suicide
me.
Suicide Squad.
That's what scares me going forward about those big budget movies. Green Lantern.
Green
Lantern's a great.
The worst at what we saying.
Green Lantern was supposed to kick off the DCEU, and it was just so
bad. It just
bad,
about killed it.
So bad that they just like kind of didn't.
But
do
aren't we all really glad that it did? It did what it did because we got Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool for it.
Did you hit? Okay, little off subject, but did you hear that like Ryan Reynolds is on the short list of people that they want for Hal Jordan again?
Yeah,
for the
I did
Green Lantern
hear that.
Corpse. I'm like, would he? First of all, he's in a Marvel franchise now, but I guess it's actually Fox Studios. But either way, that's a rivaling superhero franchise. So I know he wouldn't.
Well, it's probably because he was the only positive.
That was the thing, like. I love Ryan Reynolds, and I loved him as the Green Lantern. I loved him as Hal Jordan. The only problem is just, you know, he did a good job in a terrible movie.
Yeah,
it's like even if he did a amazing job in that movie, it still wouldn't have been.
Couldn't have saved it. It was awful.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Logan. Any other thoughts?
If you haven't seen it, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, I'm about to go see it for the second time in 4 days.
Then I might go watch it again just because it was that good.
I don't have any time in the next couple of days to see it again, but I want to, so I'll be thinking.
Well, it's
about
half
it.
Price Tuesdays in Boulder, so I'm going to that.
Oh yeah, that's a thing. I don't know. I'm glad we watched it. The anticipation was killing me, and it was well worth the wait.
Watch Logan. Do it. All right. Well, that's it then, I guess, for this week.
Yeah, we dumped it down to two topics for you folks.
Two very big things. Kind of hard to cut into threes. Logan was a huge thing this weekend. UFC.
I mean,
was
I could
other big thing.
I could recap Logan shot for shot and just keep talking about it. All
I know. we could literally do like an hour and a half. Ooh, we should do a commentary when it comes out.
A commentary.
Yeah, we should just do a commentary.
You mean I have to watch it again? Okay.
we'll set it up in here. We'll literally put it like right behind the camera or something like that, or we'll figure something out. We should do that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, all right. Thank you for joining us. And as always, don't forget to like and share on YouTube and Facebook, and also leave us a comment. Really, any suggestions for topics you might have. As you saw last week, we really enjoy talking about the things you guys care about. So leave us some comments and we'll get them in here for sure. If you're listening on iTunes, please subscribe and leave a review. And also, all these actions just take you a minute and it really helps us out. It gets us out there and amongst the public. So thanks again. And we will see you next time on the BV Dub Show.
Instead of irony, is it adamantium?
That just got out of there right there.
You sit in that. You realize what you just said.